Welcome back to A Book A Day podcast. And for the next few days, I'm going to narrate some wonderful stories, some wonderful short stories from India. They were written in different Indian languages. So you'll get to hear the translations, not the original versions. But that's the whole idea of this podcast, to bring out the best of the literature from everywhere and share it with the audience who understand English. So the first short story that I have with me is it's called The Whirlwind, and it was written by Sant Singh Sekhon in Punjabi language. And Sant Singh, I'm sure some of you who are familiar with Punjabi, he was a prolific writer. He was born in Pakistan, then moved to India after partition and wrote some really good short stories as well as plays. So let's start the short story called The Whirlwind. The Whirlwind. Platform number one of Amritsar railway station was crowded with passengers. The up train to Lahore, scheduled to arrive at 13 hours, was late by over an hour, and it would be yet another half hour before it came. Two young teachers of a local college, bound by Lahore, were walking up and down the platform, waiting for the train. Among the expectant passengers, there were a few young women sitting in more or less seclusion, or benches, or on their own suitcases, or just standing apart. And the two teachers were not above casting an occasional furtive glance at them. Women also, in a train or in a foreign place, are less restrained than usual in their manners. Young people make a public bestowal of affection in such situations, anxious to avail of the anonymity that a train journey offers. So there was nothing wrong with these two men, or even with the women on the platform. After they had been walking up and down the platform for some minutes, their eyes came to rest upon a young woman of about 25 or possibly younger. She was somewhat short-statured, a bit plump, but with a prepossessing face. Two policemen stood near her, evidently her escort. This woman cannot be the central figure in an elopement or abduction case, said one teacher to the other. She does not have that kind of a simple or roguish look. She has dignity about her. She may possibly be a police officer's wife, the other added, and these policemen may be on attendance till she is safely lodged in the train. But then she is not that kind of proud in her bearing, and she is not behaving stiff with the policemen. No, she is not a police sub-inspector's wife. She is just too plainly dressed for that. The first was in agreement with these remarks, and they cut a few circles on the platform. Now the first said, "This woman's appearance and ways are not those of a villager. She is half villager and half townswoman." "Will you marry her?" the other asked, point blank, and smiled. "I wouldn't wait for a more auspicious occasion," the first replied, and both laughed lightly. These intellectuals, though young, were evidently the sort that keep imagining incidents that could bring about a pleasant change in the tenure of their lives, with which they are ill content. "I can say her husband is a very lucky fellow," the second said further. It was easy to guess that she was married and also a mother. The next moment, they saw her 2-year-old son. The boy was a healthy and a smart child and seemed to take after his mother. Such women are generally ill-mated, the first replied, believing that he alone deserved to be her husband. The child is like his mother, said the second. Naturally, he is his mother's child. Boy, we must find out more about her. Shouldn't take such an idealistic view of the woman. For all one can say, she may be the heroine of an elopement drama, the first protested, growing cautious. No, she cannot be that. All the same, I wonder what these policemen have to do with her. Now, they were relieved to see coming towards them a man whom they knew for a talkative, insinuating person and who they guessed would find out about the woman. Maulvi Sahib, will you find out who this woman is and what is the matter with her? The Maulvi Sahib had not been less curious. He had already made his inquiry. She is a Congress worker, sir, the Maulvi Sahib replied at once. They have brought her from Gurdaspur and she is being taken to Lahore. She was to appear there in a case tomorrow. What is her name? One of the young men asked impatiently. Kunti, sir, the Maulvi Sahib was well posted with information. Kunti, the second repeated after a moment's thought. Kunti is a revolutionary worker who was arrested the other day along with her husband and co-worker for being in possession of revolutionary literature. She must have been taken to Gurdaspur in connection with the same case. Yes, sir, the Maulvi Sahib confirmed. These two and the Maulvi Sahib were not the only people whose interest had been aroused by Kunti. Numerous other people were charged with similar curiosity and had learned from various tongues something or the other about the object of their interest. The fact of Kunti's being a Congress worker had enhanced her beauty in her admirers' eyes, and whoever happened to come under this double impact was overwhelmed. In the flick of an eye, as it were, a whirlwind overtook the platform. Kunti was the power at the center of this whirlwind. At first, only the policemen, our two young intellectuals and the Maulvi had formed the body of the whirlwind, and a few khadar-clad ones had also been drawn in. But now people from all corners of the platform were rushing in. In a few minutes, they had gathered round Kunti a crowd of 20 to 25 people. In another 5 minutes, these grew to 40 or 50, among whom there were 5 or 6 women also. Nobody out of this crowd had yet addressed Kunti. The people were making and answering queries among themselves, and a few more forward were in conversation with the policemen. Kunti stood quiet in the midst of the crowd. Who could say what thoughts were passing through her mind? On her face, high seriousness and beauty seemed to be competing for pride of place. During these few minutes, did it occur to her that this crowd was drawn to her because of her beauty? But beautiful women are by no means a rare sight on railway platforms. If there's a lovely one in a corner, 2 or more young men would surely be found loitering around, watching her through the corners of their eyes, and at moments to try his luck in a frontal attack, one or the other of them would look straight in her face. In such a case, there's generally no response from the party who, a good deal abashed, bends her eyes down to the floor. If, instead, there are 2 or more pretty women, They will tell each other through looks or half smiles that their scent or color is inebriating the passerby. Sometimes such a person may be accompanied by her husband, who, if he is devoid of humor, will begin to evince uneasiness and make her feel uneasy too. But if he has some humor in him, he would laughingly point to the onlooker's preoccupation with her and thereby make her take it easy. But Kunti knew that even though she was handsome, the people who had assembled round her were not actuated by youthful mischief, and so she stood there unperturbed. She was a little shy, no doubt, but all the same she was looking at the crowd with a sober mien, as a sister looks at her brother or a daughter at her father. After a while, a khadar-clad, middle-aged man entered into conversation with her and caused the strain to relax a little. It would be idle to affirm that Kunti's beauty was not producing any physical stress in the spectators. Even these two friends of ours had taken in every line and contour of her body. "She is a little heavy at the waist," one of them remarked quietly to his companion. "Otherwise, she is flawless." "Boy, the waistline is perfect only for a year or two," the other replied. "And then under nature's law, it must grow heavy. And I regard it not as a flaw, but as a point of beauty. Unless, of course, it is definitely misshapen." Kunti had by now isolated the women from the rest of the crowd and was talking to them. What could have been the theme of their talk? Someone might have asked simply, "Sister, where are you coming from?" "From Gurdaspur," Kunti would have replied. "What is the case you are involved in?" "Nothing other than social work among the peasants. This tyrannical government does not spare women even," an old woman would put in. "But, daughter, why do you involve yourself in these matters? These are men's quarrels and should be left to them. Now look, if you are sent to prison, what will become of your child?" Perhaps Kunti would have smiled at this piece of advice, and then someone braver than the others may have supplied, "This child, mother, will go with her to prison. Wasn't the Lord Krishna born in a prison house? Nobody but can be better than he." Kunti must have smiled and remarked to herself that the story about the Lord Krishna's being in a prison was indeed a good idea. One of the young men happened at this point to turn round and notice on a bench at some distance a suburban couple who had obviously traversed at leisure the smooth contours of youth. They had two children with them. All four were eating from a tiffin carrier. The woman stood up to join the crowd round Kunti when the man extended his arm to stop her, saying, "Oh, leave it, what's the use? I'll be back in a moment." Saying this, the woman disengaged herself from her husband's extended arm and came to join the cluster of women who were talking to Kunti. The young man invited his companion's attention to her and both smiled. "The wives of these townsmen, they have great courage and even more curiosity," the other remarked. From other platforms also, men and women were being drawn in. Platform number one was altogether empty of people, as if they had been swept off with a broom. From platform number two, about half the occupants had joined. The tale had reached platform number three, and the younger people from there were also rushing towards Kunti. "Let us see when the station staff joins this gathering," said one of the young men, smiling. "Here, there's a combination of two forces," added the other philosophically. "Beauty and idealism. Two loves, love of woman and love of country. That is why I've always held the second had started when the attention of both was attracted by Kunti's child, who, cutting across the crowd about his mother, ran off down the platform. One of the policemen rushed after him to bring him back to his mother. "Smart child," someone remarked from near the policeman. "Just like his mother," the policeman replied, smiling. Some others also smiled. The policemen were by now fed up with the crowd. Perhaps Kunti also had had enough of it. The crowd was asked to disperse. The signal for the train was down too. Spectators who had come from platforms number 2 and 3 started running back to their places. Those from platform number 1 also turned away to make sure of their belongings. The disinterested townsman's wife rejoined him on the bench in the corner. He and the children had not let anything interrupt their eating. Back with them, the woman also took a bite or two and the meal was finished. The Maulvi Sahib had no need to move, for he had throughout kept his bundle under his arm. The young teachers were travelling light without any luggage, but they just moved away a little. And the first one said, "That is why I've always held that patriotic and revolutionary movements need women's participation. There are then two attractions for a man, the ideal of freedom and the love of woman. In European countries, revolutionary struggles have never failed for that reason. Think for a moment, boy. What a lot of strength Lenin must have derived in his lifelong struggle from Krupskaya's comradeship." The train sailed in and people thrust themselves in wherever they could find room. And that's how it ends, the short story. As you can notice, it's such a simple one. It captures that one particular scene in that moment. And then through just very simple observations, very detailed observations, tells you so much about what's going on in the society with respect to men and women, tells you what's going on in the country with regards to political scenario, the Congress and the British, and the revolutionaries that are there in the Congress party, and how the society, the railways, the public spaces, how all these things used to play out in India, and how these days they play out in India. You can think about that and make that comparison. But it's such a pleasant experience going back to this literature, 20th century literature, and read such simple stories, such beautiful stories. So I hope if you get a chance, if you understand Punjabi, you'll read it in Punjabi. Otherwise, you can also enjoy it in English, as we just did. Thank you once again for listening, and I will catch you next time with another story.